I'm going to be talking about irrotational gravity waves approaching a beach that break, that make a mean longshore current that then makes vorticity waves. So that covers waves, other waves, and vorticity. Field observations of shear waves. This work is done by myself and my colleagues, Elgar, Feddersen, and Herbers, and a graduate student who has now graduated, Jim Noyes. Well, I'm just going to point with my hand, heck with laser. I realize that this audience is not familiar with surf zone, and that's what I'm talking about. Waves approach a beach at an angle. They have a radiation stress, a flux of mean momentum, and when they break, they drive a mean longshore flow up the beach. And that beach and that current can be quite strong as, say, 1.5 meters a second. So it can be quite powerful, so strong you can't stand up in the surf zone. Now, the surf zone is only, say, a few hundred meters wide across here, and the current can be a meter and a half a second. So it's not surprising that it's unstable because it has enormous lateral shear. And that's what's shown here. It's been known for, say, about 10 or 15 years that the current is unstable, and it starts to develop time-dependent meanders. And those meanders are strong enough that the original mean current, this is a model result, cross-shore direction, mean longshore current. By mean, I mean averaged over many surface gravity wave periods. And you see here, without the shear waves, it's maybe a meter and a half a second, as I said, but with the shear waves that sort of blur out the sharpness, you can see that it can be down to a meter a second. So shear waves might be a form of mixing in the surf zone that can move sand and pollutants and living cooties. The outline of the talk is, first I'll describe some observations and a numerical model. And I'll talk about how the observations and the numerical model are used to estimate the shear wave flow speed. That is, these are fluctuations. If you sit at one location, you see the mean longshore current moving back and forth past you, so it looks like fluctuations. There's actually fluctuations in the velocity field that aren't at the scale of the incident waves. They're at the lower speed, at the lower frequencies of the meanders. And these meanders move down along the shoreline. So the two quantities I'm going to be talking about are the wave speed in the longshore direction and the particle fluctuations of velocity. So I'll describe observations in a numerical model, and I'm going to touch a little bit on linear stability theory. Well, first I'll tell you about the observations. This is a plan view of a beach. This is the cross-shore direction. Here's the shoreline over here. We're talking about 500 or 600 meters in the cross-shore and then a longshore scale of a few hundred meters. Each of these dots is a pressure sensor and a current meter located near the sea floor. The current meter measures the two horizontal components of velocity. So, well, this is what was deployed in Duck, North Carolina for about 4 months. It was quite an effort. And you see here the depth contours are relatively straight and parallel, relatively, in the longshore direction. I'm going to assume that the contours are straight and parallel. So I'm going to assume there's no longshore variation in the bathymetry. And we're going to use these observations to learn some things about shear waves in the field and then compare them with the numerical model. There have been previous work done using a similar numerical model that only had one longshore array of flow meters to compare with the flow observations. I'll explain in a minute why you needed a longshore array of flow meters to look at shear waves, why you can't just do it with a single gauge. I'll explain that. Okay, well, the numerical simulations are relatively simple. Nonlinear shallow water equations. Time averaged over the time scale of incident waves. a longshore homogeneous bathymetry, so I don't have to worry about variation of the bathymetry in the longshore. As I said, the nonlinear shallow water equations are time averaged over the scale of incident waves. So the effects of incident waves are included through their radiation stresses. And there's a separate model that looks only at the incident waves. They were measured offshore, their frequency and direction. A relatively simple model is used to transform the waves from offshore to the shoreline, and it includes something called a roller. That's a special bell and whistle that the nearshore processes people use. But the point is, in the time-averaged equations, we characterize the forcing of the incident waves through a radiation stress-based model. That's the forcing of the shallow water equations. We have damping, a nonlinear bottom drag term. Okay, well, these parameters for the wave transformation and the bottom drag are selected so that the mean current of the model equals the mean current of the observations. And I'll show you what I mean. We looked at a couple case examples. There's four of these case examples. This is the mean longshore current in centimeters a second. This is the cross-shore direction. Each one of these is one day. Well, let's look at this 28 August. The mean longshore currents observed are circled in red. So there's a narrow jet right at the shoreline. It's only about 50 meters wide. It's 50 centimeters a second. And then the current just drops off to about zero. On this day, the 17th, let's say the 1st of November, the currents extend much further offshore. Here we're 300 meters offshore. We still have almost 40 centimeters a second. And the observations are circled in red, and the mean current predicted by the model with the shear waves included is shown in the black. So that's where the tuning is. We selected the model parameters so that we match the mean longshore currents as a function of cross-shore distance for the observations in the model. So, okay, so the model is tuned a little bit so that the mean quantities look the same. But the question is, how well were the shear wave properties predicted when you tuned the model to give you the same alongshore, mean alongshore flow? Well, before I get into that, I thought I'd just show you, well, a little more of what's coming out of the model. These are snapshots of vorticity and other waves, I guess, for the four case examples. This is the alongshore coordinate. This is the cross-shore direction. Let's just look at this one. The mean alongshore current is going in that direction. If there weren't any shear waves, you would just see a steady, there wouldn't be any alongshore variation at all. You'd just see the vorticity profile of the mean flow is all you'd see. But it's unstable. And as you can see, it not only develops meanders, which is what you're seeing here, but it sheds off eddies and vortices because the flow is so strongly nonlinear. The shear flow. It doesn't just meander, it actually starts to go highly unstable and shed off vortices. So this is what's coming out of the model. Well, okay. How do we use the model and the data to estimate shear wave properties? Here's how we get the shear wave flow speed. I want to remind you that what we have in the field is alongshore arrays of flow meters. At each array, we can do frequency alongshore wave number analysis. We select an array, we select a frequency band, and we say, what are the scales of the alongshore motions in that frequency band? And what we see when we do that typically, suppose we looked at this one, and we looked at a frequency of 0.02 hertz, that's 50 seconds. That's clearly not the incident waves coming from deep water at 50 seconds. They're more like 5 seconds or 10 seconds. Well, what we see is, as a function at this frequency, is two bands of motion. One of them have very small alongshore wave numbers, very large alongshore length scales. That's in here. These are gravity waves. These are so-called infragravity waves. They have periods of about a minute or two, and, well, they're gravity waves. What's out here is shear waves. They're relatively short. You can see at 100 seconds, they have a wavelength of 100 meters, and they form a non-dispersive band. So the reason that you need the longshore array is to separate shear waves from gravity waves. If you just sat there with a current meter, measured the frequency spectrum, you'd be seeing both shear waves and gravity waves, and you wouldn't know which is the shear waves and which is the gravity waves. So this makes them a pain in the neck to detect in the field because, well, it's not easy to deploy and maintain those many instruments in the surf zone, but you need them to do this separation. Okay, so what you can do is, in the field observations, simply add up all this variance, and that's going to tell you if this was the spectrum of the crosshore velocity, the RMS velocity fluctuation of shear waves can be gotten by doing that integral. We do the same thing with the model. We run the model, we make pseudo instruments at these locations, and we analyze the model in the same way that we analyze the data. So it's an apples to apples comparison. Okay, so what happens if you do that? And you get the cross-shore velocity fluctuations, you do the same for the longshore, add them together, so you're getting the RMS shear wave fluctuations. Well, this is cross-shore direction, RMS fluctuation speed up to 20 centimeters a second. Well, sometimes we do pretty good. The models are the lines, the solid is the cross-shore, the dashed is the longshore, and, well, there's some similarities. I'd say they're within a factor of 2 or 3, except when they're not. They're on the same page. The size of the modeled fluctuations is comparable to those that are observed. Also, in the model, U and V are about the same. Even though you're close to the shoreline, this surprised me. I thought you'd have a lot more longshore fluctuation than crossshore, but that's not true. They're about the same size, U and V, and they both roll off into crossshore. So, nah, not too good. Yeah, factor 2, factor 3. Okay, well, what about phase speed? This is the same sort of picture from an longshore array. Here's the gravity waves in here. You just fit a line. Oh, and this is field observations. You actually fit a line through this ridge, and you get this is the speed of the longshore fluctuation, the phase speed. And this might be correspond to about 60 centimeters a second, 70 centimeters a second. That's the longshore propagation speed. I want to be clear, what I talked about before were the actual particle fluctuations, and this is a propagation speed, a phase speed in the longshore direction, not the same thing. So, these things are non-dispersive. Yes?
Is the gravity wave dispersion relation to the edge wave adjusted for Doppler shift?
Yes. Yes. Okay. If waves were coming straight in, they would have a longshore wave number of 0. There is a family of edge waves that can exist on a sloping beach, which is what we have here, and they form these lines. The question was, why aren't they symmetric? And you knew the answer, which is the longshore current is so strong that it actually Doppler shifts the gravity waves, and that is, in fact, accounted for here. So that's why this thing is asymmetric. This includes waves coming from deep water and also refractively trapped edge waves. They're all in there. Okay, so anyway, we do this with the observations, we do that with the data, and we get a phase speed. And I will say that this is not a particularly wonderful example or a selected example. There really is a non-dispersive ridge. It's not like the ridge is wandering around all over the place and we're forcing it to look non-dispersive. They really do look like non-dispersive ridges. I'll show you why in a minute. Okay, well, we do that with the model and we do that with the data. And here's the case examples. In this case, C is the longshore phase speed. Model is blue, red is observed. This is the day when the currents are really weak, 50 centimeters a second against the shoreline. Here's the phase speeds. Well, they're pretty constant in the cross shore, but we can't see them far offshore. The level in the model and in the observations of power is so low that it's in the noise. So in this case, we can only see the phase speed close to shore. But let's look at a day, 17 knob, when the currents are stronger. In the model, the cross-shore phase speed varies. I mean, the longshore phase speed varies in the cross-shore if we move offshore. Here it's about 70 centimeters a second. Here it's about 20 centimeters a second. So if, as you move offshore, the speed at which you're seeing features move past, or these waves move past, is rapidly decreasing in the cross-shore. It's doing the same thing here in the observations, a little weaker in the model. Well, that's not predicted by a simple linear stability analysis where you say, here's my longshore current profile. What's the most rapidly growing mode at each frequency? Well, what that'll tell you is, well, there is one, but its longshore phase speed doesn't vary in the cross-shore. So we're not going to explain these observations as a sum of the most unstable mode at each frequency. Not going to work. Well, it's not surprising because these flows are quite strongly nonlinear. They are not barely unstable where you're seeing just the weak perturbation that's the most unstable mode. This is one of those strongly nonlinear cases. These are snapshots of vorticity at time. That's 5 hours. This is 5.3 hours. So we're looking at a half an hour of time. And this is the cross-shore position, and this is the longshore position. So we're looking down at the beach, making a snapshot. Okay, well, look at this feature F, a front. And I tracked it in the different ones, and you can see it here. Oh, the solutions are periodic in the longshore. So the front runs out the end here and comes in the other side. I've also identified eddies A and B. Well, look at this longshore separation between the front and eddy A. It actually increases as time goes on. You can see that the distance here is about twice as the distance in the first panel. The front is moving faster than the eddy that is shed off the front. Here is a map of the vorticity at this cross-shore position along this line as a function of time and a longshore coordinate. So here's the eddy F. This line right here, this is time, a longshore position. The slopes of these lines is 1 over the phase speed of the features. So this line corresponds to the front F. And you can see it runs off the end of the page. That's here, and then shows up on the back side. Here's the eddy A. This is time increasing that way. There's the eddy A, and here it drops down below the line, so you can't see it. So the eddy appears to end when you look at on a given cross-shore location, the eddy appears to end. Here's eddy B. Notice it's not there. It's being formed. So this ridge appears to come out of the front F. So this is eddy A, this is eddy B, and you can see that the slopes are different. This means at this cross-shore location, there is not a phase speed or a propagation speed. There's at least two, the speed of the fronts and the speed of the eddies. Here's that same picture. That's the front. Okay, now, if we go into the model and the observations, at the same cross-shore location that this simulation is for, and look at the shear wave ridges, what we see in the model is, well, here's this ridge, that's the front, and here's this slower ridge. This is the mean speed, V. You can see the structure is kind of bimodal. What this is telling you is, if you do it in spectral space, you do see that there's two different speeds, but if you pick the prominent one, you pick this one. Now, if you look at the observations, it turns out in the observations, you can barely see this other ridge. Here, it's kind of weak, and you see this one. The point is, if you move far enough offshore, you don't see the shear wave. What you see is the eddies shed off of the shear wave, which are advected at something close to the mean speed. Here's what I'm saying. You get far enough offshore, like out here, you don't see the fronts. All you see is the eddies. So the reason the phase speed looks like the mean velocity, the reason the phase speed looks like the mean velocity is because offshore, it's eddies being advected by the mean velocity, and close to shore, the fronts do have approximately the speed of the mean onshore current that's strong there. Okay, so in summary, the numerical model, a relatively simple numerical model, does explain the cross-shore variation of shear wave properties within a factor of 3 or 4 of the shear wave fluctuations, and it gets the phase speed pretty much on, which is approximately the speed of the mean alongshore current. I didn't have time to talk about it here. Although the solutions are strongly nonlinear, if you look hard enough, you can find features in the solutions that do look like the original linearly unstable modes. They might be modified somewhat, and particularly offshore where there's a lot of eddies. But if you look right in the core of the strongest shear wave motion, you can still see aspects of the weakly nonlinear growing solutions there. Thank you.